these things, of everything that went on before. And I have the feeling that everyone present last week was able to grasp the whole subject, and perhaps for the first time. So we had a fairly complete picture of everything that had happened before. And now we are ready to continue beyond that. We are at the stage where we made the distinction between man before he sinned and man after he sinned. Man before he sinned was able to achieve perfection. And you remember that Derech Hashem, in the previous chapter, in chapter 2, whenever he spoke about perfection, and 7 times through that chapter he said, perfection as far as it is possible for a human being to achieve. That was only possible before man sinned. Once man sinned, that was no longer possible. Are there any questions you want to ask me on that before we proceed? Then we are ready to go on to section 9 part 3 in chapter 1. The ulam nirvad kol ze gozro midas dina yizborah shemo shela yuchlu loho odom veloho olo meyato hagia el hashleimus odom basuro shemizkalkalo dehainu hatsuro sheyishlorem ashok. There's a lot that is said in those few words. And what the Derech Hashem is explaining to us is, besides this distinction between man before he sinned and man after he sinned, God's wisdom decreed something else. And that is that he is unable to achieve perfection in his damaged spiritual state. That is impossible. In other words, there is an impurification and there is a contamination to such an extent that he cannot possibly achieve perfection in this damaged state. That is man after the sin. Which means that man after his sin cannot reach the stage that he began with before he sinned. Cannot reach that stage. In what state is he now? What is different in his state now from what it was before? He says, Shebo nizrabo hora. Evil is now has increased. Before that, he was exactly in the middle. He was drawn equally to good and to evil. And what did he decide? What was his deciding factor? If he was right in the middle of good and equal and evil, and there was an equal draw towards good and towards evil, that is before man sinned, so what made him decide? What could make him decide?
My impression was that on Wednesday, you said it was his emotions. And
not at all.
No?
His emotions drawing towards good and towards evil equally. So what is it? How can he decide? Remember the donkey?
Yeah. But on Friday night, I believe you mentioned that it was his intellect. His intellect that drew him.
Very much so. Yeah. Very much so. I said that on Wednesday night also.
Oh, we misunderstood.
It was only his intelligence and his intellect that could make him decide which to do. That is what he was graced. How many parts of the soul of God? What is the Derech Hashem says? I'm testing you now. What are they? Without looking at your nose.
Emotion,
yes.
and the body.
Yeah, and the zikucha group, which we're leaving for the time being. So man has got life and intellect, and we took life and we divided it into two parts. That is the biological side, which is life itself, and then in addition to that, there are the emotions. The only difference is you've got to realize that animal life and human life are not the same. Although both are biological, they are not the same. Animal emotions and human emotions are not the same. Even animal senses and human senses are not the same. We hear and we see, and we can see exactly the same as an animal sees, but it's not the same type of thing. We don't see the same thing. I'm not speaking about the physical part of it. It is very much doubted whether animals see colors. It's doubted as whether they see only black and white or whether they see colors. It's doubted. But that is not what I'm referring to. You see, when I am sitting in the jungle, under a tree, speaking to somebody, and I hear what he says to me, and I'm engaged in conversation, behind me, stalking, is a lion. And this lion also hears this man speaking to me. But he hears something quite different. And he sees the man. What does he see? If he's still hungry, is it a good meal or isn't it a good meal? If he's not hungry, is there danger, isn't there danger? That's what he sees. He hears the sounds, and the sounds help him to determine, is there danger, isn't there danger? When I see a person and I hear a person altogether differently, and I told you once, I gave you the example that Dr. Mates experienced and gave over to a few of us, and that was when he was brought into a nursery school, and they thought that they were so clever, the way they were teaching sex to these little children of 5 years of age. One little boy was a flower and another little girl was a flower. And then the girls were bees, and they went from the little boy to the little girl. They pollinated, and that is the way they taught them. And then they brought him out into the garden, and they showed him the guinea pigs there. And now the guinea pigs had sex, and he called them in. He was horrified. And he said to them, you don't realize what you are doing. You are not only damaging sex forever with these children, but you are damaging any kind of marriage they might have. They are growing up to believe that the sexual act in human beings is the same as in animals. What a terrible mistake. In the animals it is purely a biological act. In the human being it has a double purpose. It is there for procreation, and it is also there that it is a love act. It's not a biological act. That it should produce the greatest pleasure that a woman can give a man and a man can give a woman. And that brings about a closeness such as nothing else can bring about a closeness. That is the reason for it. But you are training these children from the very beginning to regard the sexual act as something very casual. The harm that you are doing. And afterwards he gave a lecture to many people about the subject. But that was 40 years ago. Today, it's commonly accepted in the secular world. Man and animal, there's no difference. Man is an advanced animal, that's all. But he's an animal. That was 40 years ago, where an American professor of sociology saw things so clearly, and he came from the secular world, but that he was able to see very clearly. Today that's gone. Man and animals are the same. Now man has got life and emotion, and to that also, to life, belong the five senses and the emotions, and then he's got his intellect. And it is his intellect that can make him decide, or could, man before he sins. I promise you I'd always keep you informed what it is we are dealing with. Man before he sins was able to make that choice with his intellect. He was right in the middle. Man after the sin says, Shebonis Rabohora, where evil now is so increased in him, so the pull towards evil is much stronger. How is he going to decide? On the one hand, he's still got his intellect. Even if the pull is stronger towards evil, he's still very much more difficult, because now comes cognitive dissonance. Now the pull towards evil is so great that he rationalizes and he justifies, as you had a whole period that went past from the early 1960s right into the 1970s, where young men and women were taught the only criterion is your own pleasure. You do what is pleasurable to you. And that is how drugs became to be so rife. Now, that is where man is today. Shenis Rabohura Elohis. So before man can reach that stage where he was when he was created, in the first stage, as the first man before the sin, before he can reach that stage, he can reach it only through decomposition, disintegration of the body, which in effect is the death of man. Can only have death. But it's not only his death that is necessary, that his decomposition must take place and disintegration, but of everything that there is in the universe. Because when he sinned, he brought down not only himself, but he brought down the whole universe together with it. He damaged everything. And for greater detail in that, you've got the first chapter in the Mesillas Yesharim, which by now you should know very well. Because I said it is necessary to go through the introduction and the first chapter of Mesillas Yesharim 365 times. Once a day, do it for a whole year, then you really get it. And there he explains. And now, the third or the fourth function of the soul was that it is able to purify the body. That was only before the sin. After the sin, it was no longer possible for the body to, for the soul to purify the body. That now it was necessary that Elo the that first the soul must depart from the body, and the body must decompose and disintegrate the Oz Yachazel, and then the soul returns to the body, the Hibone Vinyan Chodosh, and it is a new building that is put up, a new being that is created. The Sikoneis Bo HaNeshomo, and now the soul returns into the body, Usel Zakechehu, and it is able to do its third function, and that is it is able to purify the body. That is as far as the human being is concerned. Now, as far as the world is concerned, when the first man sinned, he sinned himself, and he brought down everything with him. And I gave you the example that when we did our revision last week, when we did our reviewing last week, I gave you the example that when he ate from the fruit, something happened. Until then, everything he did was a means to an end. And what was the end? Kol hanikro bishmi lichvodi occ. It was, everything was the Kovod Hashem, and everything went to the establishment of Malchus Shemayim here upon earth, of a heavenly kingdom upon earth. And everything that a man did was, everything he did brought him somehow nearer to that goal. I gave you the example when he was given a beautiful fruit. Take a peach. And he looked at the peach and the beauty that was in the peach, the coloring, the tenderness of the skin. And then he tasted it, and how wonderful the taste was. And the man felt such gratitude to Hashem that this is what he gave him. Can you imagine what a closeness he brought to the Hashem? And I gave you the example of the mother who takes a little boy and she just bought the best Swiss chocolate, a Lindt Praliné, and it's got the best hechsher of the Zurich Rabbinate. What a wonderful hechsher it is. She bakes off a square and she gives it to the little boy. Why does she give it to the little boy? Wanting to have it. He'll appreciate it, he'll taste it, he'll enjoy it. He'll be thankful to her. It brings him nearer to her. It brings her nearer to him. He takes it and he gobbles it up. And the mother says, right, next time you get Hershey's. And she keeps the chocolate. And after they finish lunch, or after they finish dinner, it's 7 o'clock and all good parents see that their children are in bed at 7. The children are in bed, they've given them their Hershey's, and now the husband and wife sit down and they have the Lindt Praliné. Perfectly in order. Can't appreciate it. Man before he sins, man after he sins. Before he sins, after he sinned. So before he sinned, everything was a means to an end. After he sinned, it was an end in itself. And nothing is so bad as when the means becomes an end in itself and the end is taken away. And that is what happened after the sin. Sex was a means to an end, procreation, and to bring about such pleasure that a man gives to his wife and a wife to her husband, but such pleasure that brings them so close together. Now it was something quite different. Now there was, the means became an end in itself. And so sex is an end in itself. No thought of the pleasure it gives the other one, only the thought of the pleasure it gives oneself. It's an end in itself. Can you imagine the whole world is brought down to quite a different level? Sex is not the same as it was after the sin as it was before the sin. The fruit doesn't taste the same afterwards as it does before. Doesn't taste the same anymore. And it isn't the same anymore. Animals don't behave the same anymore. Man has spoilt it all. He has damaged himself and he's damaged the world round about him. And now it says, the only way man can be brought back to where he was at the beginning, before he sinned, is with a complete decomposition and disintegration of the body. Applies not only to man, applies to the whole world. And then to be built up again. You soon see. Otherwise, the soul cannot perform its function of purification. And so the whole world must be destroyed from its present form. The Yoshu v'yikoles b'tzura acheres ru'uyo l'ashleimus. And then it must return and have a new form completely, in which the whole world will be able to come to a state of perfection. That is, Malchus Shemaim upon earth. Therefore it was decreed now upon man that he should die, and then he should again be born again. And that is the idea of Chias HaMaisi, the resurrection of the dead. Now, let's take the world, the whole world. The Alva Olam Sheyechorei V'Yavdo V'Yichudash. And the same decrees on the world that it must be destroyed and then renewed. And that is what the Gemara says. Shito alfei shnei avi olmo. The world is to exist for 6,000 years. The Chag Chol. And at the end of 6,000 years, it is destroyed. Ulesuf elef shono. And at the end of 1,000 years after it's been destroyed, HaKodesh Baruch Hu Chozer U'Machadish Yisrael Lomas, Hashem returns and renews the world. Then it can once again, then it is in the state it was before Adam Orishon sinned. Now, I need hardly tell you that that is a very important paragraph of chapter of part 3 of chapter chapter 3 of part 1. Yes, did anyone want to ask me a question on that? Yes, Beth?
Is this referring essentially to Jewish people?
The time being, we are just speaking about man.
So this refers to all mankind, have the same
potential. Man before he sinned and man after the sin. Don't draw conclusions which you have no right to draw. Man before he sinned, man after he sinned. We haven't come to the Jew yet. We are now dealing only with the human being. And it's a human being after he sinned. Not 5,748 and a half years after he sinned, but the day after he sinned, the year after he sinned, the generation after he sinned, 2 generations after he sinned. We haven't yet come to Noah, we haven't yet come to Avraham Avinu. No Jews yet. That is where we are at the moment.
So, this is mankind in general, not being specific to Jews, is I guess what the question is.
There are no Jews.
Right.
They're not Jews, the only people.
Right.
We're speaking about man after his sin. Not 5,748 years and 5 months, and 6 months to leap year. And 6 months after he has sinned. Not then. We're speaking man before he sinned, man after his sin. Afterwards, that's all we can say. We haven't come to a Jew yet. There are no Jews yet. That is the position. Got that clear? Now, I want to explain to you what all this is about. Why is it necessary that there should be death? Why is it necessary? And now you remember that Hashem says that now he's going to drive man out of the Garden of Eden, and now he says, now he must be careful that they don't eat of the tree of life. Before that, there was no question about it. They didn't have to eat of the tree of life, because their life was such that through zikuch hanefesh, the soul purifying the body, that would be the change over to another world. There wouldn't have been any death. The only case where we've got it is Eliyahu HaNavi, and to some extent Chanuch. That is there, where there wasn't actual the separation of body and soul. But after the sin, once there was the sin, there had to be the separation of body and soul. Why? Because there had to be the decomposition of the body before the soul could be entered. Why? Because it was contaminated. It was impure. And that is the only way in which one could purify. Why is it the only way? Now let us deal with the question of purification. So, you take a knife, and it's a meat knife, and you cut some butter with it, and you phone me, what must you do? I say, put it 3 times into the ground and you can use it. So you're satisfied. We're happy that nothing more has got to be done to it. Now, you take a milk fork, and you've got a meat roast, and you're taking your milk fork and putting it into the meat all the time as it is roasting, and then you take your meat with your milk fork and you take the meat out of it. What must be done to cleanse it? Now, you need hagolah. Boil up hot water, put it inside. Now, you take a milk pot and you cook meat in it. What do I say you've got to do? Put water into the pot. Put a stone into the water, a red hot stone, and the water immediately boils up, sizzles up. The displacement of the water makes it go over the sides. That purifies. Pesach comes, we've got to do our stone. There it's right, the comet is right on the stone, in the stone. For that we need leader. A greater form of purification. Glasses, you can soak glasses for 3 days, you change the water every 24 hours. The ways in which we are able to purify. Then, Hannah Marsh comes to me. She, by mistake, she was serving me, and she had her milk dinner service out. Served it on her milk dinner service. I said, Hannah Marsh, you are in great trouble. Tell me. I try and help her in every way. I say, it was, of course, the meat was cold. Oh, no, says Hannah Marsh. It was hot. I said, of course, you first put it onto a platter. No, says Hannah Marsh. I put it from the pot onto the plate. I said, at least you took it with a fork. No, says Hannah Marsh. I just turned the pot onto the plate.
When did you do that?
Anything that can happen in the kitchen happens to Hannah Marsh. And that's the first sign that it's a kosher kitchen. Yeah, you know. No doubt about that kitchen. That's a kosher kitchen. Shiners all the time. Well, now starting the next thing. I say, Hannah Marsh, of course, it's a very good service. A very good dinner service is Hannah Marsh. A good dinner service? How can we afford a good dinner service? We can't afford a good dinner service. I say, well, what is it? She said, it's earthenware.
Oh.
I say, it's glazed. She says, Hannah Marsh, no, it's not glazed. I say, Hannah Marsh, there is nothing I can do about it. She says, nothing at all? There seems to be a cure for everything. Nothing at all? Even a pot in which you cook the meat, you can do something. Yet I didn't cook the meat in it, and nothing can be done. I said, Hannah Marsh, there's only one thing you can do. Break it all up. Break it. Take it to the potter and let him redo it all. He puts it into the kiln and he melts it all down and let him if he says Hannah Marsh, and then is it all right? I said, then it's perfectly all right. That's the only way you can deal with earthenware. called kashrut in any other way. And the classical place, case is in the Gemara, where there is an oven, and they made the ovens in those days, as they used to make them in Manhattan and in Brooklyn, 80 years ago, 100 years ago, that in the yard there was an oven, and the bread was baked there, and that became tomei. And once it became tomei, the only thing you could do was to dismantle the whole thing. Dismantle everything and then rebuild it in the Torah. Now, what is the human body to be compared with? Prison break. The only way you can purify prison break. That is why it's necessary to have this disintegration and this decomposition. Only thing you can do. Can't do anything else. And only then, when it's built up, then the soul goes back, and now the soul has got this other function of to be mezakech to some effect. It can purify the soul.
It goes back to another kind of body?
No.
The same kind of body?
Same body.
Like you build up the same body again?
Same. Hashem builds up the same body. Everything is retrieved, nothing gets lost. Then the body disintegrates, it disintegrates into earth, into the elements, it disintegrates the oxygen, hydrogen, carbon dioxide, and Hashem retrieves it all, and the body is rebuilt. Same body, same parts, that is the Chiyasam Hesed. And now the soul can go back into it, and now the soul can purify. You might ask, that we stand in the same danger.
What's the difference with
Yigulim? Yigulim is another thing. That's another thing. That is, in this earth, that the soul comes back into this, comes back into an impure body, as well. That's another thing. Yigulim doesn't fall into this category at all. This is the clear summation. Now, just that.
In what form? Some people die when they're young, like children. Some people die when they're in their prime. Some people die in old age, or they maybe have lost limbs and this sort of thing. Do we come back in the form that we died? Do we come back in what would have been our prime?
You come back in prime. In what man was destined to be. In what he was destined to be. That is what he comes back to. Of course, we haven't yet decided what happens in the interim. What happens to the soul? We don't know yet. We don't know that yet. But that is the way it works. Now, that is as far as the world is concerned, 6,000 years. 2,000 years was without Torah. Until Avraham Avinu was 59 years of age. When he was 59 years of age, the world had been existent for 2,000 years. The next 2,000 years there was Torah. Now we've got another 2,000 years where there is a deterioration of Torah. That will make it 6,000 years altogether. Then there is the 1,000 years of disintegration, decomposition of the whole world. And then there is the rebuilding of everything. Now, that is the view of the Derech Hashem. I remember my mother teaching me this when I was a very, very young child. And she taught it to me, there are 7 days in the week. And she said, we are in Thursday. Each day representing 1,000 years. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. 749. And she taught it to me, it was long before this day, but it was still in the 6,000. And then from 6,000 to 7,000 is Erev Shabbos, is the great preparation. And 7,000 is Shabbos. Now, I never forgot what she taught me. And when the time came and I came across this in the Gemara and I was learning it, it seemed terribly, terribly far-fetched to me. Where did we destroy it? It was quite a lovely period in which I learned, and I learned this for the first time. Hitler had not quite come to power. And there was the League of Nations. And people believed not going to be war anymore. That's not going to happen again. And now we are where we are. The oldest is so very close. Now you've got to realize how it goes. Moshiach comes before this time. This is only after Moshiach's time. But Moshiach comes before this time.
Before the time of
the 1,000 years.
Before the time, before the 6,000 years are.
Before
the 6,000 years are. Moshiach comes before the time. Now, you know, there are people who contact us. There are people who love to live in a world of illusion. Don't want to face reality. I could understand that and I can accept that. There are people who can't face that, they are weak. Haven't got the courage. Musa and Kabbalah is not for those people. For those people you use ethics and mysticism. That they love. Don't deal with reality. Now you know, things have improved, but it still happens that people speak to me as they say, we want spontaneity in our emotions. We don't want discipline. We want spontaneity because that is real. We want sincerity. All this controlling your emotions, that's not sincerity. But they do everything they possibly can to run away from reality. And that is sincerity. Look what people do with death. They have morticians which are beauticians. Look what they do with it. You hide it all. You escape from it all. After a funeral they have a big luncheon. Escape from it all. Musa and Kabbalah is not for weakness. If you can't take it, don't touch it. Do ethics, mysticism, all that is fine. Don't have to worry about reality there. We are dealing with reality. Yes,
Elizabeth.
Before this time, yes.
I don't understand why. I don't understand how that works.
We'll get it clearer a little bit later, but the way it works is that before there can come the time of purification, there must be a situation where we are ready for it. You follow?
But we're not ready for
it. Well, now we're not ready for it, but I hope the time will come when we will be ready for it. And we won't be ready for it by shouting we want to hear now. It's only by doing something about it that we can be ready for it. only by doing something. But we are hoping that the world is going towards it. So this comes only afterwards. Now, let us go on. Behimei lepi sholi zeh zmanat vulu aviti dehainu zman kibul asocha shezachar nilimala umetomer hu acharat echir. So he says, in that case, the real time for reward and receiving of our desert and the place for it is after the Chiyas HaMeisim, is only after the resurrection of the for Olam Sheyiz Chadesh, in the world that will be renewed, the new heavens and the new earth. So Odom Yehoni Beva Gufo Uve Nishmoso, and in that world man will enjoy that world both with his body and with his soul. In that his body will be in a state of becoming purified through his soul. And through that it will be prepared to enjoy that good. The Ulam, however, even on this world, in this world, man will be observed. And their levels and their degrees will be vastly different from one another. It will depend what they did here on this world, how hard they worked and how much they achieved of perfection in this world. And there'll be a vast difference even then between the person who reached a higher stage of perfection whilst he was on earth and the person who didn't. Because in accordance with this amount, the neshama itself will have the ability to purify. So there are a degree in the ability of the soul to purify. The soul in Vagup was a kracheu, and it will be able to enlighten the body and purify it. The yiknu shneyev yekolu malo, and the body will help the soul, and the soul will help the body to achieve splendor and greatness. The yiru uimli is korevelo odem boroku, and then body and soul together will be able to come near to Hashem. The lay over old porno vlehonis the kiva wamiti, and there to enjoy the light of his face and to enjoy his true goodness. And we discussed what that means. So let us stop now at paragraph 10. Yes, Betty.
Is this Olam Haba? What he's talking about?
Now, this is Olam Haba that he's speaking about. Eventually, this is Olam Haba. You've got to be careful because different authorities use different terms. They use terms the same terms, but they use it for different things. The Rambam, when he speaks to Olam Haba, speaks about it differently from what we speak about. When we speak about the Olam Emes, the Rambam speaks to Olam Haba. Now, a little bit later, the Derech Hashem, what we call the Olam Emes, he's going to call the Olam HaNeshomas, the word of the soul. So you've got to be careful of that, mm-hmm. of these terms, and you've got to know how these different authorities use these different terms.
Okay, also what's the guarantee that the same thing that happened
to the Rambam will happen again? Very good. That's very good. Now, we'll speak about that. That will not happen again. It won't be in the same form as it was with the first one.
No, won't be in the same form?
No, it won't be quite like it was with the Morisha. There will be far more clarification.
So we still have
to do what? That is a big problem. There will be, even when Moshiach comes, there will be a big reduction in free will. And if there is a big diminution of free will, a bad thing. For a weak person, fine. But for a strong person, it's more difficult to achieve greatness.
Mm-hmm.
The struggle won't be so great.
Mm-hmm.
So, there is a very great difficulty as far as the Mashiach comes. But when Mashiach comes, there will really be a very big diminution in the gates of the world. So the struggle will be very much less. Yes, I'm sorry, carry on there.
Yes. Diminution in the gates of the world, therefore diminution in the world.
Then, of course. Of course. For example, some people, when they come to the Shabbos afternoon with a big foot in their hand, they feel compelled. There's an irresistible urge to draw the curtains and switch on the radio, switch on the television and look at the match. I haven't got that listen. I don't have to exercise my finger in that direction. So, but fortunately, the other things that I've got to exercise my finger in my eye. By the greater test, my free will, my bakura, I've got to exercise it. So it will be more difficult, there will be different things in which to exercise it.
But you think that we're going to need to see
the world in which one grows. This is the world in which one grows. This is really the world in which one grows. But after Moshiach comes, before what the Derech Hashem calls the Olam Haba, which is after the Tekiyas HaMeisim, that it will still be some, there will still be opportunity for growth, and the soul will be able at that stage to reach the stage that it will have the ability to purify to the necessary extent. But just remind me to give you a word or two before I continue on this, that the soul has got the ability to purify. I'll just say a word or two about that. Linda? That is over level.
That's the way.
He explains it, yes. That is the way he uses the term Olam Haba. The Rambam uses it differently. Yes. The Rambam uses Olam Haba. The Olam Haba is the Olam Haba is life after death is Olam Haba.
The death we have now.
That's
not after the resurrection of
the death we have now. The Rambam calls Olam Haba. We call it Olam Haba.
How does Rambam explain then the Mashiach comes?
The Mashiach comes, that is the time certain things happen before the Mashiach comes. Then the Mashiach comes, and there is clear relation of afterwards. If the Mashiach comes, that is the same.
But if there is an Olam Haba, will we also be again resurrected?
The Olam Haba, what is the term we're using? Is we're using the Derech Hashem's term, or we're using the
Olam Haba?
The Olam Haba, which is the Olam Haba. So that means that he's your first term?
You can. After Mashiach comes, you also go through a transition?
No. After Mashiach, those who are dead, are living in the Olam Hashem, but are living in another world.
Right.
They experience in the other world, they experience something. But it is only after that they disappear something. The Rambam doesn't take the thousand years of destruction, the Rambam doesn't take that. There has to be a change that will please, but he doesn't take it that there has to be destruction. So the Rambam works in differently from the Derech Hashem. But in principle it is the same. The principles, I work on the principles, I give you the principles, those are the same. See that?
Yes, what is the purpose of the tree of life in Ben Eden? If it is living, if man didn't want to eat it and live in Ben Eden, as a man is going to be described as a living
tree. I could deal with that subject. It's a very, very vast subject. And his life is altogether a different form. But after your sin, then that would be the form in which it would take place. But it's a different form altogether. So that is it. All we are concerned about is that before man sins, there was a commandment only not to eat of the tree of life, which we discussed last week. No mention of the tree of life. Because I was asking you, because he was very interested to people, he lived forever. He lived forever. In the same way as the soul was eternal, the body was also eternal, excepting that it was spiritualized, eventually spiritualized by the soul. Now before we leave that subject, I told you, I would just say a further word or two about it all. And that is, we spoke where the Derech Hashem explained the different functions of the soul. He said there were two, and we divided it into three. And he said there were three, two of which we were conscious, one of which we were not conscious, and we divided those of which we were conscious. He said that the Derech Hashem really means three in life. It includes senses and emotions also. And I've explained to you that the senses and the emotions are completely different in the human being than what they are in the animal. The Rambam speaks about that, and the Rambam gives the example. He says, we speak about an animal being able to see and a human being being able to see. An animal being able to hear and a human being able to hear. He says, but when we speak about light, we speak about the light of the candle. And we speak about the light of the sun. Are they the same thing? And when we speak about the light of the moon, that we use the word light for all these three different forms of light. So they're all completely different. The light of the moon is a reflective light, but it gives us light. The Shagat Ariel, when it was full moon, he sat outside and he learned. In order to save the candle, he didn't have money for the candle. In order to save it. So it's life. He said that it's altogether different. I can use the word life. He said, so it is. That is the difference between an animal and a human being. We use the same word, even for the senses. He said that they are completely different. Now, the fourth, in the Simas Yisrael, is the third, we worked it out, it was the fourth, the function of the soul, he says, of which we are unaware. And that is that the soul purifies the body. Now, in all these things, however far and distant from us they are, there is just something that we are able to get out of it. For example, we've spoken about the joy. The joy, the real joy, the ultimate joy is being face to face with reality. The greatest reality is Hashem. Being in the presence of Hashem, and later on it will be there, Hashem will speak about the Zivash Kino. That is the greatest joy that one can possibly have. What kind of a joy is it? Of course it's a spiritual joy. When a person who has been working to discover something makes, doing research, working for years and years, and suddenly makes the discovery. No joy can compare to that. If it is true. I've given you the example of Archimedes. So great is that joy. And that is the joy of being with truth. The joy of being with reality. No greater joy than that. I've told you also that it says in the Tehillim, into as Hashem b'simcha, serve Hashem with joy, giri biri odo, be glad in the trembling. When one realizes that we are responsible to ourselves and we are accountable to ourselves and we've got to pay for everything, there is the order, there is trembling. Hashem says, give you the order. David Amir says, give you the order. He dwells in that temple. How can it be? Because that is reality. And when one is with reality, there is no greater joy than that. That is the truth. That is the absolute pleasure. Now, everything Hashem gives us an opportunity for this. For example, joy. What makes us happy? Spiritual happiness is much greater than physical happiness. We have a very good meal. We enjoy it immensely. Spiritual. On Shabbos, the same food tastes different to me, it does. Just tastes differently. My wife prepares coffee for me, and I have it in the early hours of Shabbos morning. Quiet, no phones, no noise, and I have my coffee. I tried a few times, asked my wife to prepare it to me for a week, but I gave it up. Never the same. Something to it. Even the Shulman Yitzhak. There's another thing, and that is that there is ruchnius even in Marshall, even through this ruchnius. And the Ali goes so far as to say, and he explains one of our brothers like that, that the ruchnius that there is in the ocher, the spirituality that there is in the food, and the taste of the food, spiritual, in physical, and the appearance of the food, that supplies food for the soul also. One of the greatest joys that a human being can have is kovod, his honor. He's recognized, he's honored, big joy. Nothing goes into his stomach, he enjoys it much more. Giving you the illustration of where I was at a great banquet, 1,000 people, and they were honoring a person. He paid for the banquet, and you didn't have to reply back and say, "I accept," and send $500, $250 for your brother, $250 for your wife. It was an invitation, and he was presented with a silver tray. His wife was presented with a plaque. And I looked across him sitting at the head table, wasn't eating a thing. And during one of the breaks in between the courses, I went up to him and I said, "Mr. Moon, you're not eating anything." He said, "I'm not allowed to. See this glass of water? I'm not even allowed to gulp it, I can only sip it. I'm not well." I said, "Mr. Moon, I'm terribly sorry for you." He said, "You don't have to be sorry for me. This is the greatest day in my life." Nothing goes into his stomach. The amount of money that went out of his pocket for this affair, what he gave to the organization as a donation, and then they paid for everything. And it's his greatest day in his life. What is he getting out of this? What is he getting? Call it. Now go and explain that, he said. It's ruthless. That is something spiritual. Call it. Speak about it. Lo cholo oritz kvodoi. Baruch kvoda Hashem in the Talmud. Speak about Hashem, we speak about covet. What it is to get covet. Purely spiritual. There is always something there that one sees. Yes,
I'd like to ask if in this topic what covet can be turned into something that's materialistic?
Yes, of course. It can turn something into that which is bad. A man boxes and wins what do you call it? Not a match. accidents. They're the whole thing. It does. But the matches of matches of matches. What are the matches? Look at the championship. Win the championship. Look at him accurate. He may have killed a couple of people on the way. Of course. He gets tremendous comfort. Of course it can be, as with everything else. I can get a lot of enjoyment out of food and it's staple food. Of course. But, right, that is as far as we take it today. I would like to be able, I would like to be able to finish the chapter by the next year, but I can't say that can be done. Why shouldn't it be? Who told me the day after Purim? You know, I've taught you in previous years that what the Me'il and what the Rishonim say about getting drunk on Purim.
No, I know, but I just wanted to...
How reprehensible it is.
That wasn't
right. And what does it mean that Adela Yoda, that he was drinking, and he doesn't know the difference between Baruch Mordechai and Orur Homer? And he explains it. He says, what gives us greater joy, the downfall of Haman or the ascendancy of Mordechai? You must reach that stage in your joy because it didn't make any difference. What is more, that Haman's downfall or our victory? Which means more? It doesn't really matter. That is the stage that he must reach. The Gavio gave us a little further depth, but we don't have to discuss that either. Thank you very much. Yes.
And before I forget, could you please, tell me, what is the hexa for the Lent Palimu?
That Americans wouldn't know how to appreciate it.
$30, and that includes the book, his instruction, and Selvin has said math one sells for $11. A math you can use to protect yourself if you have to do math and have this repetition, somebody you don't have to do a direct one or not.
How many people do we need to
know? We need at least, I'd say 12 minutes.
So maybe you can mention the sticker at least, or at least if you're interested.
None of us care with men and women. I mean, you don't really do anything.
Okay, so he's charging
$30. It's a very useful. Well, the man who across charges $30, but they don't give you the mask that he's giving you. He also has certification of good for 2 years, and the man who across is only good for 1 year.
aren't there organizations here in the valley like Rice Christians on the Good Samaritan for free? I don't think so. We had a good my certification on it, a road certification, and anybody would do it for free.
And I didn't know that was for free. I'm sure usually I've had lower rates for the number of hours, but you know, I remember they can't do that.
I think he's very good because he's a fireman, and I feel like he gives you information that you might not get from other people about how to use like the 911 system and how to break into it if you're not able to get into it. But you know, because he works in the fire department, so
what he tells you
things like, if you're somebody showing up at night, if you've got somebody's prowling around, you should call 911 and just get his mouth and they'll come out within like 3 minutes as opposed to the police, which it might take a half an hour to an hour to get there. But he tells you all these little things that he feels that women should know in order to protect themselves, which you might not get from the American Red Cross and the people that are at the telephone system. But he felt that he can tell you the social
services.
Well, he told me to ask what days because you're interested in them. You have to do it two times for 4 hours. If he's willing to do it, that means you have to travel from Berkeley all the way here for 2 times. I don't know. But then we're going to find out a better deal than this. I just have to say because of his experience.
And so everything that you ask men, all the possibilities, how do you want to be created? He said that is how he created them. And one of the things that he created was the consciousness of enjoyment. Now he has presented thee with life and desire. Thou art grateful to him. A man who has consciousness of enjoyment and he wants to enjoy himself. And Hashem wants that. As long as one enjoys oneself with the right thing. If he takes them away, thou sayest, the Lord has given, the Lord has taken. Thus thy true life is one of enjoyment. And that is the summing up of this little piece from the third part of the Kuzri. How the Chacham explains to the king who wants to understand what is all this Judaism about. This is how he explains it. It's to the person who understands the Brocha and knows what it is. This is no burden. This is a consciousness of enjoyment which brings joy into life. It's 9:30. The shiur is over. I'm still giving you a little time if you want to ask any questions. Or make any remarks.
How would you explain when a child is born and perhaps his grandmother has or is born with something for others to come from?
Some years ago, my wife gave a series of shiur on that. Do you remember? She gave a shiur in Shimba. I wouldn't like to go into that whole question because we weren't dealing with that. But we went into the whole question of suffering and what it is. We looked at this work at that particular time. Lisa, did you want to ask me anything?
Look, I'm not going to address this either.
I beg your pardon?
I'm not sure if you're going to want to address this either, but you were speaking about individuals in general.
Yes.
Judges in this world. What about something that goes causing a question? Because Hashem enjoys getting enjoyment from our Sunny Bracha or any Kondos book. Isn't there enjoyment of that?
You're putting it very well. You're putting the question very well. It's bound up with something that we discuss from time to time. And that is that everything we have got, we've got from Hashem. So there is that in Hashem. But in Hashem it takes a different form. Now, my son phoned us today from South Africa and he spoke to us and he asked him a question. He's got a dysmenorrhea. And told us to make this development for stable in this meditation. My wife at one point, I had another man. We got tremendous joy out of all this. Tremendous joy. Now, you get another father and a mother, they get tremendous joy. Their son was in the team that won the baseball cup, whatever it is. It's a tremendous joy. Now, is it the same type of joy? He can't understand what we are so pleased about. Is he seen over television? Is he seen in the newspaper? Photographing in the newspaper? No. How much does he get from it? He doesn't get a penny. Doesn't get a cent. So my son, you know what he does? Does he learn anything? He said, of course he learns. Any university wants to. Not only do they want him, they prepare to give him a degree without him writing any examinations. Well, we've got something. What have you got? You follow? It's a different type of joy together. So with Hashem, of course there is joy. And then you pain with Hashem. But it's a different type of pain and a different type of joy. What we have got is the mere shadow of it. And of course Hashem is joy. You follow? And I'm making it a little bit clearer. Yes?
Well, the family that I think is showing deserving of death for any other reason?
No. Only because they were part of the administration. Not in the course that they didn't object. They actually took part in it. They wanted this.
So they
were looking at every project. Oh yes, there was guilt here. Oh, there was guilt for the act. There was responsibility and guilt for the act. Wasn't that the rest of the people? Right? Yes? Is anyone, I'm going to that job. Anyone before and after? Yes, Maura?
I was kind of curious going back to the founding of the Nazi thing on heaven. The handover of one Jew for this 100,000. What if somebody decides to volunteer?
Yes, that is a question that I'm often asked. Who is such a thing? There is such a thing that a person gives his life to save. That is another thing. We get this in Smith Hall. Smith Hall gave his life to prove how serious Shabbos was. Now, you know, I've got a difficulty with this. With this whole Shabbos thing. I've got a very great difficulty. My difficulty is really at least a two-fold one. It's probably much more than a two-fold one. The first difficulty I've got with Shabbos is that it's such a serious matter. To break Shabbos is such a serious matter. But so serious. I've really become to people break Shabbos. What can we do so? Now, that's completely wrong, and I've got to fight against that. Make excuses for that. I must fight against that. But I've got another problem, and that is to bring to my own people the seriousness of Shabbos. Very difficult to bring to them. Hear from what did you do? It was really in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, but in a land of wilderness. Nobody had ever broken the Shabbos. Once they did it, when they went out for the manna, and all the manna that they extra that they brought turned there, so then they knew, and then they did it again. So he goes and people say to them, Shabbos, don't worry about it. So he broke the Shabbos. He went gathering sticks on the Shabbos and gave his life for it. And he's praised for it. You follow? So you get that type of thing. You get the I think you know the Schwarzbach in the early 1900s killed a Russian in Paris because he was responsible for the pogroms in Russia. You get the case of, I think it was David Frankfurter, who killed the Nazi in Davos in Switzerland during the late 1930s. And as a result of that, the Germans had Kristallnacht. They built all the synagogues. But he killed this Nazi daylighter that happened to be in Davos. And he waited for him until he went up to that part of Switzerland. Switzerland is built made up of cantons. And each canton has got its own law. So that is the most lenient law. He only got a few years imprisonment for it. He didn't get the death sentence, he didn't get life imprisonment. They got the leaders. So he was waiting basically until he came there, and then it was absolutely premeditated. Then we've got the man, I forget his name now, he was in the Polish cabinet in, you know, this is all ancient history to you, in 1939, when Poland fell, when a cabinet, Sikorsky, when General Sikorsky escaped to London and formed the government of Free Poland in London. You don't know about this. It's a bit like the Free French, the word of the Gaulle. You never heard of it? You've heard of it, no? You're educated. So, de Gaulle was in France, and Sikorsky was also in, de Gaulle was in London for the French, and Sikorsky was in London for the Polish. And I forget his name. What is the name of the teacher? I just forget his name now. He was one Jew on the cabinet. Evidently, being in the cabinet, he heard what was going on. And nobody would say anything about it. I said, you keep quiet about the Jews. He heard what was going on about the Jews. And nobody would allow him to speak. You, the member of the cabinet, you've got to say the line. We have 20 people in the cabinet, 19 say nothing must be said about that. You are not allowed to say anything about it. So one morning, I think it was Shabbos morning, he went to the consulate, Polish consulate, where they sat, and he committed suicide on the steps and left him out. And I think that is the first indication that the world had that there was something wrong there. You follow? Now, those are extraordinary circumstances. So, that would probably be the right thing. That would be all right. One person said, I want to do it, I want to give my life for it. So will the rest. Of course, the whole thing is highly imaginative, because the Nazis, they said that thing. and then they killed this person and killed all the other 99,999 afterwards. So it didn't work out in effect like that. But I'm just giving you that as an example. One more question? Yes, you're welcome.
You were talking about protest.
Yes.
That we must protest such an obligation. So if I look in the world today, what do you consider to be the protest?
I think that we've got to protest against the desecration of the Sabbath. Yes, I've got a protest against the number of people who don't put on the feet to kill him in the morning for their prayers. Anything else? You need nothing else to do. But you digest it out. Those are the things to digest. But to set up a protest on the campus about something, and these things are ignored, then it's a penalty, doesn't it? Pardon me. I'm just giving examples of what I think we should protest about. Mm-hmm. These are things which we should protest about.
So you don't think we need to
I think it's necessary to protest that there is so much desecration, official desecration of the Sabbath in Israel. I think we should protest. I think it's wrong to say, it's Israel, you're not going to say anything about Israel. I think this is wrong. I think we should protest against that.
What about citizen not specifically Jewish, but what you make to all people?
So that is not our obligation as holy Jews. As Americans, yes, but it must be something that affects Jews. If it doesn't affect Jews, it's a different thing.
Well, I'm thinking of things like psychology. I mean, like
equality
and water and things like
that. Right, as long as it affects
people.
That's perfectly all right. That affects us both. That is perfectly all right. You can work for it. But don't take it out of its context. And you can't say that you've learned. It's a very difficult thing. All the other things they're telling you don't worry about. You don't get tripped about. But this gets tripped about. Doesn't seem to be that, isn't it?
I mean,
what do you think of a woman who comes to me and she says, I want you to speak to my husband? I think that's the trouble. She says, he doesn't wipe his shoes on the doormat when he comes into the house. I say to her, but why do you want me to speak to him about it? Can't you tell him that? He says, if I tell him that, he gets me. I'll say to him, you don't need to tell me this. He probably gives you a push. She says, no, I have to go to the doctor already. So please, when you speak to him, tell him to wipe his shoes. I say, but I tell you that you asked him. No, don't tell me that you swear at me. You must say you're in bad language. Oh, yes. I tell you what to do. I said, please, I don't want to hear it. But please, tell him to fight me. Now, what do I think about this? So you follow the rule, okay? You're a Jew. So first does this. That you don't want, I'm not you. Speak about myself. You say, excuse me, by you being used the pronoun, you are both being you. Do you understand what I'm saying? So it must be a perspective about everything. Look how many people are out worrying about ecology. How many people are there to protest about the dissipation of the Shabbos in Jerusalem? How many people are there to be put by putting up a Mormon university of all places on Mount Scopus? You know what means Mount Scopus? Have you ever been to Washington?
I think of Mount Washington.
Not Mount Washington, it's not Washington.
Yeah.
Washington, D.C. you know where the capital is, where the White House is, you know that long road leading up to it. What would you say? We decide we're going to put in the ship as what? We're going to put in the ship. Let me meet places. I've got 500 married young men. And we place them in houses. That's where we're going to put them up. They put up on Mount Cooper. That's the equivalent of putting it up there. A place which has to be for conversion. Conversion of Jews. That's what they want. And to the college says this is perfectly good, it's good. Puts it on the map. Brings more money into Israel, brings more people into Israel. Is he listening to protest against that? Who is going to protest against that? The Mormons? Who is going to protest against that? So the whole thing is out of joy. We're making a big fuss about the husband that doesn't like his shoes with him. All the other things, that doesn't work. I'm just trying to give you the picture. You follow? All right. You don't have to speak about it outside. You see the goes on. You understand what it is. Thank you very much, James. You're the answer.
Are you referring to the word? Maybe this one has a problem. They said the word, so I didn't hear it. Somebody did that one in the family? I mean, I like that. I know, it is true. No. I didn't hear it. The word left? So you can refer to it. I don't know.